Tom Chapin, and I'll be playing at the Patchogue Theater in Patchogue, New York tonight, 8 p.m., with my family, the Chapin family, my brother Steve and Harry's band with Big John Wallace and Howie Fields, and my daughters, Abigail and Lily, the Chapin sisters, and Harry's daughter, who grew up in Huntington, Long Island, Jen Chapin. And we're talking to Rabbi Saul Solomon on Dave's Gone By on UNC Radio.
Oh, shalom, shalom, everyone. Shalom to all the listeners in the neighborhood. This is your old pal, Rabbi Saul Solomon here. Now, let me tell you, one of the most venerated names in folk and pop history is Chapin. Of course, you had the late Harry Chapin, but my God, the family is so huge, and it seems every single one of them is either tapping on something, strumming something, singing something, writing songs. Well, one of the best and best known of these is Tom Chapin. You've seen him on TV for years. He does concerts all over the place. He's got a bunch of albums out. He has three, count them, three Grammy Awards, and you can see him tonight, this very night, on Long Island at the Patchogue Theater with the whole Chapin family. They're doing a big concert to reopen that venue. The Patchogue Theater, renovates all sorts of stuff. So, ladies and gentlemen, won't you please welcome to the neighborhood Mr. Tom Chapin. Shalom!
Thank you so much, Reverend. Rabbi.
Oi, Gewalt. Oi, wrong religion.
Rabbi Saul.
That's
thank
better.
You.
Or you can call me Your Highness. See the one.
It's Your Highness. Perfect.
That's better.
Nice talking to you.
So let me ask you, tell us first of all, of course, about the concert that you are doing this very evening in Patchogue. Is it a benefit, or is it just a regular concert, or what is it?
It's actually just a regular concert, but if you come to it, please bring some kind of a food donation for Long Island Cares, which is the great food bank in Long Island that my brother Harry started, maybe almost 30 years ago. And so there's a collection of food. But the concert itself is a concert of Chapin music. We will focus on my late brother Harry's songs. We'll do Taxi and Cats in the Cradle and Circle and Mr. Tanner and some of the other stuff. But we'll also do, the reality is there's four bands here, four bands of Chapins. There's my brother Steve with the remnants of Harry's band, Big John Wallace and Howie Fields. And Steve is a wonderful singer, maybe the best singer of the Chapin boys. And then there's Tom, myself, and then there's my daughters, Abigail and Lily, who sing as the Chapin sisters.
Are there any Chapins who aren't musical?
There are.
Who? What do they do?
Let me get one more, which is one of the most important, which is Jen, Harry's daughter, Jen, who grew up in Huntington, Long Island, and is one of Long Island's great treasures. She now lives in Brooklyn, of course. So you're going to have it's almost like a mini Chapin festival.
And really, it's like a family reunion every time you go on stage, which is kind of cool.
Singing and new takes on old songs. And I guess it's too late now, but I often say you can go on my website, tomchapin.com, and request a song. But this can be tonight, so it's not enough time, I think. But it'll be a great time for us, and I hope for the audience.
Well, I'm sure it will be over at the Patchogue Theater. But let me ask a couple of different questions about the family. First of all, I read a profile or an interview of you guys from just a couple of years ago, and your mom was still alive. Is she still alive now?
No, she died last November at 95.
Oh, I'm sorry. I did not...
But my daughter Abigail had a baby in January. She named for her Elspeth.
Is that your first grandchild, or do you have a bunch?
This is my fourth.
Gewalt.
There's more. 5 weeks later, her sister, Lily, my daughter, had another little girl who's named Willa. So we have these two little baby girls who are gracing our lives. So, it's one of those wonderful things that happens in life. You lose a beloved one, but there are new ones coming along, and it keeps you going.
So where did the music or the musicality first come from? Was either of your parents specifically musical or encouraging?
Absolutely.
Ah, tell me.
The Long Island will remember my dad. My dad was a really well-known jazz drummer, mostly in the jazz world, because he wrote a book in 1949 called Advanced Techniques for the Modern Drummer. And that is the Bible for jazz drummers. It was the first time they wrote down what he called independent coordination.
Ooh.
And if you're a serious jazz drummer, you know the Jim Chapin book. And every time I meet a drummer, I say, hey, did you ever use a Chapin book? And they go, you're not related to Jim, are you?
Okay. No, that's...
We grew up with music. Now, my mom and dad divorced when I was pretty young. We would visit our dad and saw him playing all the time. And he seemed to have more fun than the rest of the world. And I think that's a good reason why a number of his offspring are musicians.
That kind of makes sense. But Harry and you guys went into folk
yeah.
pop, rock, as opposed to jazz or that.
Well, Steve and I were choir boys in Brooklyn. And when I was 12 and Harry was 14 and Steve was 11, we heard a recording that changed our world. Called The Weavers at Carnegie Hall.
Ah, of course.
A seminal record by that incredible folk group that started so many other folk groups, people like Kingston Trio and Peter Paul and Mary and the Limelighters, on and on, and a lot of the great folk singers. We were all inspired by Pete Seeger, Ronnie Gilbert, Lee Hayes, and Fred Hellerman, that incredible group that was blacklisted because they were singing left-wing stuff. And then in 1955, reunited for a concert at Carnegie Hall, which they luckily recorded. And that recording became kind of the springboard to the folk revival, because so many other younger people said, hey, as we did, we could do that.
Right.
So Harry got a five-string banjo, and I got a guitar, and Steve started first playing a 10-string ukulele called a teeply or a tipple, and then moved on to bass, and we became the Chapin Brothers. And we started singing, and first singing all the great old American songs that we'd learned from Pete Seeger and various other places, and the Weavers.
Did you ever get to meet the Weavers, by the way? Any of them?
I met every one of them except for Lee Hayes. Lee was died, but I live in the Hudson Valley, Saul, and so was blessed to do many, many concerts with Pete. And I met Fred Hellerman actually last year, just before Pete died. And Ronnie Gilbert, I've done a couple of concerts with. I have a song called This Pretty Planet, and I get a call from Pete Seeger.
Yeah.
And this is like a dream come true. Tom, this is Pete. How are you doing? Good. Okay. Well, I'm about to go to the West Coast. This is like 15 years ago. I'm about to go to the West Coast and do a concert with Holly Near and Ronnie Gilbert. And Ronnie suggested we do your song, This Pretty Planet. Would you send it to me? And I felt like I died and gone to heaven.
Absolutely.
So it is wonderful. And of course, over the years, I did probably 50 shows with Pete over the years. I mean, I'm a folk singer in the Hudson Valley. And every time I did a concert with Pete, it was for a benefit for some cause.
Well, probably the Clearwater thing or something.
Clearwater, absolutely. And just various things.
Do you have other Pete stories or anecdotes? Because with that many concerts, you probably hung with him, had lunch or stuff like that.
Well, I mean, the first time I met him, actually, I was my mother's first cousin. We were very close to Arthur, and he died suddenly. And it turned out that his wife had gone to school with Toshi.
Oh.
And at Bennington, and I think earlier as well. And so we go to this, a week after he's dead, we have this kind of Quaker funeral where, you know, at the house, everybody's sitting, and who's there but Pete and Toshi? Pete Seeger and Toshi. And we were huge fans, and I had no idea he was coming, you know.
Right.
But he came, and he brought his 12-string. And I'm sitting next to him. First of all, beforehand, we're sort of tuning up. And this is my first funeral of someone I really love, and they want us to sing. And I say to Toshi and Pete, I'm not sure if I can really do this. And Toshi looks at me and says, of course you can. This is what you do. You sing the song. They cry. I said, okay. And then we're halfway through the thing, and people get up and talk about Arthur and this. And then all of a sudden I turn. I'm sitting next to Pete, about, you know, 10 feet from him, and he picks up his 12-string and goes, brong, do everything, turn, 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 there is a season, turn. And I said, as many times I've said in my life when I was working with him, this is the perfect song by the perfect guy at this moment. And Pete was amazing in that way. And so that was the first time I met him, and it was like, oh, my gosh.
Wow.
It was everything I'd hoped for and dreamed of. The last time I saw him was November. He died in January a year ago.
And right, yeah.
Before that, a little club up in Beacon, New York, called the Town Crier, a friend of ours, I can't think of his name, Babe Burns, I think, of the work of the Weavers, set up. He said, this is the 65th anniversary of the start of the Weavers. This is in Beacon, New York, which is the town nearest to where Pete was. And Pete came, and he was 95 years old. And he came on two crutches and came backstage, and he looked very weak. And he sat there, and he asked me to roll up his sleeves before he went, and then I helped him on stage. And it was like the resurrection.
The second the lights hit him.
The lights hit him, and he was marvelous and had us all singing. He told these stories, and that was the last time I saw him. It was about 2 months before he died.
Those are pretty great bookends, though, as far as a memory of
it. I feel blessed. You know, I really, if you told me when I was 12 and I was listening to the Weavers that I would actually know this guy, and I had many of his records because he more than anybody, really introduced America to its own music.
Absolutely. And have you sung with and worked with other legends? I know Judy Collins is on some album.
Judy is a friend of the family as well. And let's see. I've done bills with many, many folks over the years. You live long enough, and especially when you're doing these kind of benefit stuff, you're connecting with a lot of folks.
Do you have any special memories, though, of famous people?
Oh, let's see. I can't think of something offhand here. Pick a name. Judy, for instance, in 1987, my brother Harry had been dead for 5 years, but it would have been his 45th birthday. And the Congress gave him the highest medal they could give anybody, which is the Congressional Gold Medal, who was not in the military. And only four other songwriters had ever gotten it, and they were the big ones. They were Irving Berlin, George M. Cohan, and the Gershwin brothers. Those are the four. And the fifth one was Harry. So Sandy, Harry's widow, decided to have a concert at Carnegie Hall to benefit World Hunger Year at that point, the hunger organization that Harry started. And she invited everybody and picked songs for them. So we had Bruce Springsteen, we had Pete, we had Harry Belafonte as host.
Wow.
We had Kenny Rogers, we had the Smothers Brothers, Richie Havens. I mean, it was an amazing group of people who all said yes. And then Sandy calls me and says, you know, Judy doesn't really like the song I picked for her. Can you talk to her?
Hmm.
I called up Judy, and she said, I'm not crazy about this. Is anybody doing Cats in the Cradle? And I said, well, Sandy wanted Kenny Rogers to do it, but Kenny really wanted his own band and all that stuff. So he didn't want to sing. He wanted to just talk. So she said, well, I'll do it.
Okay.
And I said, wow, Judy, it's from a man's point of view. She says, no, it's not. It's about a performer and children. And I said, well, actually, it's interesting because the lyric was written by Sandy.
Oh.
It was. Yeah, about her first husband. And she said, wow. She said, I'm definitely doing it. And she just did a wonderful job. And she still sings it to this day. So that was great. It's one of those songs that no matter what kind of child, no matter what kind of parent you are or were, it's true. So it was amazing to hear her sing it.
Now, can I ask you, Tom Chapin, you started, as you said, with the Chapin brothers, the three of you, and Harry and you, and is it Stephen? I'm sorry, I forgot the third.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's happening, and then obviously your paths start to diverge, and Harry becomes more of a famous singer-songwriter. Was there any kind of rivalry at some point? Did you ever go, like, you know, why him, not me?
You know, there was a huge rivalry in sports and in card games. But in music, not. One of my best, I just did a tour this weekend with Livingston Taylor.
Oh, my.
James, a great friend. And he said this great, we had this talk about it. He says, listen, you know, being brother of one of these guys, you get all the pluses and none of the minuses.
Hmm.
He said, you know, I love this. He says, you know, James is on tour and he can't walk down the street and go into the shop and then wander around the street without getting a crowd. He says, I could do this, and I make good money. But for me, we grew up together, and Harry was my older brother, and probably could not have had a better older brother except his older brother, James, who's also left us. I'm suddenly the patriarch of this family, which
wow.
is surprising. So Harry and James, we had these wonderful older brothers, and they were totally supportive of what we did. I toured with Harry for about 8 months and decided I really didn't like being the younger brother on tour with Harry. And so I went off on my own. And he always totally supported that, although he was much happier without we were together. So, But the family thing about Harry was, we'd say, two's company, Harry's a crowd. He had that personality that was just light up a room and just to be the center of attention.
And what's interesting is that even now, a lot of what you say, a lot of what the concerting is devoted to his work and his songs. I mean, there's room, obviously, for the songs that you're writing and you're doing.
Sure. Well, I do that all the time, but that's what's special about this concert tonight.
You're saying, oh, we're going to do Cats in the Cradle, we'll do Taxi. It's like the first things that you even mention before you even talk about you is talking about Harry, even at this stage.
It depends on the context, of course. And the context tonight is we're at the Patchogue Theater in Patchogue, New York, and we have a food drive for an organization that Harry started, Long Island Cares, and tonight is Chapin Music, and so this is a special thing. But you're right, I often do a song of Harry's in my own sets. Depending, if I'm doing what I call a family show with kids, then I will not.
Right, well, yeah, Taxi wouldn't quite be appropriate material for...
But if I'm doing an adult show, I'll often do Cats in the Cradle. I always finish with Circle, because Harry wrote that for my TV show, Make-A-Wish, way back when.
Wow.
So, I mean, he's part of my life. You know, people say, well, what would have happened if he wasn't there? And I say, I don't know. You know, he was always there.
But, well, one thing I didn't even remember and realize is that you were in a Harry Chapin musical on Broadway. What was that like?
Well, that was amazing. Harry was the star of that. I never thought the musical was that great. He kind of left it off to these Broadway producers, but he was terrific, and the music, of course, is great. But it was great fun to do. And then after Harry died, we put together a show called Lies and Legends, the stories of Harry Chapin. I was music director. I wasn't in it, but that was really great fun to be part of that.
And you were also...
And another musical called Cotton Patch Gospel that he wrote the music for, and I finished it. And I was the music director of both of those, along with Steve on Lies and Legends.
Why don't you tell our audience what a musical director is? It's a conductor, but what else does the music director do?
Not, in this case, we didn't conduct, but there's a director who is figuring out what the actors do and what it looks like and all that stuff, and it's kind of really running the whole thing. But we were the music directors, which means we kind of helped put the band together and the arrangements of the music. And Steve and I were steeped in Harry's stuff, so that we were the right, as my bass player says, we were the right tool for that job.
Because I do love the theater so much, I'm not going to leave Broadway alone so quick. You were on Broadway in Pump Boys and Dinettes.
Right. That was great fun, too. That was a lovely little musical where the actors were the musicians as well. There was five people. There were three pump boys who had a little a garage, and across the street was a diner, and they were the dinettes, so the pump boys and dinettes. And I stepped in, and with that, after there were four, I guess it was four pump boys, it was piano, bass, acoustic guitar, and electric guitar. And I stepped in on the road doing it with two amazing dinettes. One was Maria Muldaur.
Oh, wow.
One was Sean Colvin. Before she was famous.
Of course, yeah.
And then I came back to New York when that closed, and I got a call and said, listen, Loudon Wainwright is leaving the Broadway show. Do you want to step in?
Sure.
And I said, sure. I had two little kids. Abigail and Lily were toddlers at that point. And I lived in Brooklyn, so it meant I could work at home for 6 months, which was just great.
Well, was that difficult, being a father and having a family and a wife? I mean, that time, that 6 months, you could stay put with the family. But was it tough being a family man, especially a music career like yours, depends on being able to get on a plane and a bus and a tour and a thing? Was it difficult?
Well, that's the Cats in the Cradle.
Right, yeah.
And on my new album, 70, I have a song called Guitar Child. And folks like me do not retire, we just reload. And that's what I do. But it's not like the Rolling Stones or James Taylor or something where you go on tour and you do it for 4 months and you never see home. Much lower level, so it's usually weekends, you know.
That's
home
perfect.
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, then leave Friday morning and come back either Sunday night or Monday morning. And so I really had a connection, the opposite of most fathers, which was I was around on the weekdays fully and then gone on the weekends. And the best part of it was, of course, I have a wife who picked up all the slack and did all the heavy lifting, my wife Bonnie. So
how is it so different since the whole music world for music distribution at the very least has changed so much in the last 20 years now, with the beyond even CDs, you got the Spotify, you got no longer Napster, but has that affected you much, or is the children, especially the children's CD market, still a disc?
You can't make money on your recordings anymore, unless you're some huge, unless you're Taylor Swift or somebody. And so the creators at my level, and my daughters and Harry's daughter, who are the next generation, it's a very tricky time. And I don't get me started on railing about Spotify, but Pandora, which he actually pays more than Spotify, somebody worked out, a friend of mine worked out, how many plays would it take
Oh, my God.
So you realize that the money's being made by Pandora of their ad revenue. But the creators, us, who write the songs, sing the songs, and invent the songs.
And also, you are the guys who have to go into the studio with musicians, rent, you know, pay them for a night or two, rent the studio.
You know, it's, and so as far as I'm concerned, it's this crazy thievery where our stuff is not just, you know, it's become data, not a creative act. And so that's one side. The other side, that I'm on the board of the Grammys here, in New York City, and they're talking about how radio here in America does not pay a singer. So you ask Aretha Franklin, how much money did she make in her life from Respect, R-E-S-P-E-C-T? Zip on radio. The writer got money, but singer. And so Gloria Gaynor, any of these wonderful great singers that you've listened to your whole life, who didn't write, end up toward the end of life. Now, Aretha's doing fine, I think. But some of them, you know, you get to the point where they can't perform anymore, and there's no money, no residuals for singing on radio. Not only that, but all around the world, where every radio plays, pays. They don't pay any American because Americans won't pay them. So that's a whole other side of this. The music industry is in a kind of a you know, changing world right now, and it affects us hugely. I've seen it in the CD sales,
right,
where I get about a fifth of what I used to in the 90s.
Well, I assume...
I'm at live, I'm talking about, and in terms of being you know, selling on in other ways, in stores and stuff, they just don't exist.
Well, yeah, I mean, I assume, like so many artists, when you do a concert after, well, maybe not tonight, but when the concert's over, you're at a table signing.
I will be there tonight.
You are going to do that. So, yeah, so people can buy a CD from you guys directly, and you get, like, I don't know, $15, $20.
Well, you get $15 minus whatever the venue takes, which might be 20 or 25% or something.
Fair enough. But
pay for it. But still, you're making, you know, say I'm making $10 per CD.
Yeah, you're not making 40 cents, right.
You know, a little, you know, 100th of a cent when it's online on Spotify.
But what happens, I mean, you are 71 years old, yes?
Yes.
And you're, thank God, you're in pretty good health, yes?
Well, knock on wood so far.
Right. But, you know, 5 years from now, everything you're doing depends on touring, or do you have other revenue streams, like when they use your music on TV or something?
The union, I'm in this one wonderful part of the musicians union called Local 1000, which is for those of us who are traveling musicians. And I got a little sag and after, so I have some retirement stuff. But you're right; it's if I didn't have, and I have Social Security, of course, which is usually a benefit. So I'll be all right, but a lot of people at my age who don't weren't as lucky as me as doing the TV and the various things I've done in my life will have a tougher time. So it's tricky being, you know, you got to really love this business, but when you get to a certain age, if your entire the money that you're living on is by live performance, that's a tough one.
Hey, speaking of TV, that show, the children's show that you did in the early 1970s, is that ever going to be on, is it on DVD or Blu-ray or?
Not, Saul, you know, and the reason is that the lawyers back then didn't do their homework, so it had a number, very fast cuts, and it was done by, they used the library of the ABC news department, so they used all this footage, and they never cleared it, and so I've for years I've wanted to, you know, just make a deal with ABC and say, so can we do, you know, a DVD best of Make a Wish, you know, and then I would have been doing that for you know, for the last 30 years.
Of course.
And but no, because they not only their lawyers, but now ABC owns I mean Disney owns ABC. And so it's layers of lawyers.
Oh, forget it. Yeah, you're done. Layers of lawyers. That's a title right there.
That's a song.
Layers of lawyers. And I inspired it. Oh, boy. It is inspiring talking to Tom Chapin here in the neighborhood. Remember that you can go see him and his whole mishpucha, the whole family, is at the Patchogue Theater for the 7th Patchogue Folk Festival. It's going to be Jen Chapin, Tom Chapin, Steve Chapin, the Chapin sisters, Jonathan Chapin. Is Mary Chapin Carpenter going to be there too or not?
She's not, though. She is a distant relative. I met her in Texas a few years back, and I said, so are we related? And she said, I wish people would stop asking me that.
Well, no, somewhere it says she's a fifth cousin.
Yeah, that's about right, because her grandma was a Chapin.
So there you go. So she really is.
Most of the Chapins know where they come from. But the first Chapin to come into the New World was Deacon Samuel Chapin in Springfield, Massachusetts.
Deacon Samuel? Well, you guys are not Jewish, that's for sure.
1635. No, and we're remnants of the old WASPs.
Okay. All right. That's about. Although, I imagine you do not vote for a WASP. So, question for you: Hillary or Bernie?
Whichever one ends up being there, it's I'm happy to follow them. I'm really happy Bernie was in it, but the real scary is the other side.
Well, yeah, I think a lot of us. Speaking of scary, also, since you are a person for causes and you're doing the food bank, Food Cares? What was it called?
Long Island Cares.
One of your other issues that you've been very strong about is something that affects my friend Dave, who hosts this radio program. He lives in Colorado, northern Colorado, and there's a lot of fracking.
Oh, boy.
So you've been very much on top of that. What is so bad about it? Does it really poison the water? What do you have against fracking?
Well, there's lots of stuff. I went and visited Dimmock, Pennsylvania. With a little northern corner of Pennsylvania and it was astonishing to watch what had happened, not just to the land, because they pour and pump incredible chemicals, which they've set it up, they don't have to even tell you what they're pumping down there, but it ruined the water for the whole neighborhood. And not only that, but it ruined the neighborhood itself in a personal way, because some people took money from the fracking companies, and then across the street, people refused to do it. They didn't want it to happen. And now those people don't talk to each other back and forth.
Well, that has happened here as well. Farmers...
Like a guarded, like a war zone. And then they can't sell their property anymore. Their property's value is just... It just crumbled because nobody wants to move into some place where you have to pump in the water. You have to bring your own water, and it's poisonous, and it's just an astonishing thing. I just find that as I get older, you don't really care what the big companies are making this quarter. You care about what the world's going to look like for your grandchildren. Mm. And let me tell you, fracking is one of the really awful things. Not to mention that the whole thing, methane that they brings up, hurts global warming. You're pumping out this awful stuff. So anyway, I'm totally against it. The fact that here in New York, Governor Cuomo banned it, I was like, thank you.
Well, where's there room to frack in New York? You have to buy a vacant lot somewhere in East New York.
You haven't been in New York, upstate, man. I mean, all across. We have the largest national park in the country.
Oh.
And it went the first great national park. Upstate New York is, and it's all shale country, That same shale thing that Pennsylvania is fracking, it comes right up to New York. It just follows it. So there's plenty. But I'm just thrilled about it, and I hope that other people follow.
Moving back to the music with Tom Chapin here. Are there one or two songs of yours that you wish the whole world... I'm sure you're proud of all your music, but are there songs that you particularly wrote, not Harry, but you, that you think, oh boy, I wish this were a hit, but I wish everybody, the school kids would sing this in school, I wish people knew it.
Have been that way. There's one called This Pretty Planet. This pretty planet spinning through space, you're a garden, you're a harbor, you're a holy place. Golden sun going down, gentle blue giant, spin us around, all through the night, safe till the morning light. And on my first family recording called Family Tree, that was recorded with my two then 6 and 8 year old daughters and Judy Collins. And it's become a song that's actually been sung in many, many places, especially schools. And one year it was the song that woke up the astronauts in the Discovery 7 space shuttle. He woke up John Glenn. He'd still be
my gosh, that's pretty cool. And as you said,
as a publicity thing, they asked each of the astronauts to pick a song to play as a wake-up song, and somebody picked, "It's a Wonderful Life" by Satchmo.
What a Wonderful World, you mean? Yeah.
I'm sorry, It's a Wonderful World.
Yeah, but no, that's also the song that you mentioned that Pete Seeger called you about.
That's right.
More Pretty Planet. So that's
not it, exactly. And I had no idea this was happening, but the wife of the pilot of the Discovery 7 space shuttle had three kids. They had three kids, and she said, and they were fans of that song. And she said, "You got to have this." So it happened on a Sunday morning, and I'm flying back that evening, and I get home, and my phone message machine is totally full. And people say, "Did you hear that?
That is fantastic. That must have been one of the best days of your life, I'll bet.
That's very cool. And later on, one of my fans said, "Well, I know John Glenn. You want me to get a picture?" So on my website, you can find a picture of John Glenn in full regalia saying, "Thanks for the wake-up call."
That is cool. Now let's go, though, to another. What's a song that doesn't have that level of knowledge?
Well,
like something that you wish were as well-known and used as What a Pretty Planet.
Oh, it's hard to pick. I mean, I have 24 CDs now, Saul. And the newest one, 70, has got, there's a fracking song on that. There's another one called "You Can't Spell Smart Without Art. You Can't Spell Smart Without Art. All the testing will tell you it's there on the chart that you can't spell smart without art." About how schools across the nation have cut the arts.
Oh, yeah.
Cut music and dance and theater totally out of their things. And here in New York and in L.A., the two biggest cities in America, most schools just don't have the arts. And I'm saying, what a ridiculous thing it is. You know, story I tell is the turning of the millennium, January 1st of 2000, 1,000 years. And PBS had this, my wife was ill that day. She never gets sick, but she was sitting lying in bed, so she just turned on PBS and watched the millennium turn across the world. They went from hour to hour across the world, the Pacific and then across the, And every place, every country,
yes,
did music, dance, and art. That's what humans, that's how humans, converse. That's how we celebrate. That's how we talk to each other. That's what moves us.
Well, yeah, I mean, you don't want to put on the TV and watch a bunch of Asian people doing math problems.
Exactly.
I mean,
the businessmen saying, "This is what we did this year." That. No, it was how do you deal with the big issues, the big stuff? It's the arts. And what really makes us human is that, music. I bet there was music before there was language,
I wouldn't, there'd be the beat.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, "Run away, there's a tiger, run away." That sort of thing. Last couple of questions for the very delightful and charming Tom Chapin here in the neighborhood. I've talked about your songs, I've talked about Harry Chapin's songs. Do you have a favorite, we know you still probably love the Weepers albums, but do you have a favorite song or two by other people that you love, love, love?
I'm doing a song recently on my auto harp by Bruce Springsteen called "My Hometown."
Oh, yeah. That was from the big album. That was from Born in the USA, the album.
About, a kid sitting on his daddy's lap driving through town, and then you turn around by the end. I'm 35. I got a kid of my own now. And me and my wife are thinking about moving out because they closed the factories down. And that's always a really moving song to me. Let's see. My daughters just wrote a song. They were, Abigail and Lily were, the Chapin sisters were asked to run one of the stages on the big climate march in New York City last summer.
Wow.
And Abigail said, "Well, we knew all these old, great old protest songs. We thought we ought to write one." And they wrote a song called "We Will Not Stop Singing." "We will not stop singing. We will not stop singing. We will not stop singing till the whole world knows a song. Till the whole world sings along, till the world can sing, till the world can sing, till the world can sing along. We will not." It's a zipper song, a la Pete Seeger and Woody Guthrie. It goes, "We will not stop marching. We will not stop praying. We will not stop shouting. We will not stop." So So we'll not stop voting, you know.
Right. Yeah.
And it's one of those zipper songs, and every time I sing it, I get really emotional.
I've never heard that phrase used, that description, a zipper song. I'm guessing what it means because of the way you just described it, but I've never heard that term. Zipper meaning you loading a little bit of a different part of the line, but the rest is the same. What does it mean?
Absolutely. It means once you learn a verse, you know the whole song, because then you can just... And Pete and Woody started doing that when they were traveling around and singing at union rallies and various things during the 30s. And the songs that worked the best was something with a good chorus or a good verse that you can just change two or three words. You know, we will not stop shouting. That's the same thing. We will not stop singing. We will not stop shouting.
Well, please, I'm an old angry Jew. I will never stop shouting. Believe me. Now, one other thing that we do on this radio program that Dave, the host and producer, does almost every week, he does something called a wretched pun of destiny, where they make a really horrible, terrible play on words. But you're kind of a champ on this. One of your albums is called "Give Peas a Chance," really, and then "Billy the Squid." Is there a special place in hell for people who make puns? Honestly,
either that or a special place that I guess I think puns are. You have to use them the right time. You know, they can get really...
Well, yeah, in Brussels, it would not be probably the best moment.
No, that's exactly right. And sometimes, you know, when it's a really emotional moment, that's not a time for a pun. But there's a great delight in word games. And so Give Peas a Chance is about, that whole album is about good food on the green earth.
Mm.
And there's songs like Locally Grown and Farmer's Market Good. And the junk food pyramid, and so a bunch of stuff, and that's at one of my family recordings actually. And Billy the Squid was that's a song. That my friend John Forster and I came up with. We were trying to come up with actually a song about an undersea song for kids, you know.
Oh.
And John mentioned, he said, well, how about, and he'd be just fooling around. He goes, Billy the Squid. We went, whoa. And Calamity Jane.
Oh, God. Oh, there goes my lunch. Ay, why Calamity?
The song is great. It's like a Western tune, you know. And it even has the doo-doo-doo, like one of those Fistful of Dollars things in the middle of it.
Yeah.
In the sagas of undersea outlaws and the great soggy deeds that they did, the saltiest beef to come down the reef was the outlaw named
Billy the Squid, yeah.
From the Grand Banks, he'd steal sand dollars and escape on his seahorse named Sid. He took from the shellfish and gave to the shellfish. Did big-hearted Billy the Squid. Yahoo!
That's actually way cool. I love the stealing the sand dollars. That's clever.
Well,
that's good.
I have this wonderful collaboration with a number of writers, and one is John Forster, a great theater writer, and my band guys. Michael Mark and John Cobert and then Phil Galston and John McCutcheon I've written a lot with, and Simon and some other folks. I've decided that music to me has always been a collaborative event from the point in the very beginning when I was singing with my brothers. Actually, before that, when I was singing in the choir.
Yeah, no, it's just with that Billy the Squid. The one problem with the song is that all the guitars are out of tune. Sorry about that. Very, very, very sad. Well, we've had a hell of a time. Hell of a time. Enough. With the marvelous Tom Chapin, there's no reason for you not to go tonight to the Patchogue Theater to see the Patchogue Folk Festival with Tom, his brother Steve. Jen is your... Wait, Jen is the niece, all right? You got Abigail and Lily.
My daughters.
Are you what? Sorry, your daughters, yes. Jonathan, who's Jonathan?
Jonathan is Steve's son, and there's Big John Wallace, the high voice in Taxi and the low voice in Mr. Tanner, and Howard Fields, who was the original drummer for Harry, the only drummer for Harry, and maybe Clark Wallace, John's son, and the great Jamie Foxx, who plays with Jen, who is a wonderful jazz guitarist. So it'll be an amazing evening of music and fun and stories, and really looking forward to it. And if you come, remember to bring some food for Long Island Cares.
Oh, that's right. You can bring cans or anything else, or...
Just non-perishable.
Non-perishable food for Long Island Cares, the charity set up by the person we're talking to, Tom Chapin. I wish you a great concert.
By me, by my brother Harry.
Oh, actually, you've taken that on.
Yeah.
Hey, actually, also one other bit of confusion, because I always confused Long Island Cares with Hungerthon, because you always seem to be involved in that. Was Hungerthon just a radio thing?
Let me explain it to you. So, Hungerthon is really the World Hunger Year, which is now Why Hunger. It's the other organization that Harry founded, Why Hunger. But Long Island Cares is very specifically a food bank in New Jersey. In Long Island.
Long Island, okay.
And that feeds an enormous number of people every year. It's been an amazing and strong, wonderful organization. Long Island Cares is the food bank. Why Hunger deals with the helping hungry people get in touch with food and helping them towards self-reliance.
Ah. Thank you. Thank you for explaining that. Because I remember hearing radio in the 1970s, and they were talking more about it was called Hungerthon back then.
It was the full day fundraising, our big fundraiser for Why Hunger.
Got it. Well, the fundraiser, though, tonight, well, it partially is for Long Island Cares, which Harry Chapin founded, which Tom Chapin is still preserving, and preserving his music and his voice and the songs of himself and his brothers and his whole family. So go, please see them tonight at the Patchogue Theater. For more information, visit tomchapin.com. That's also the place to get a bunch of his albums, like his newest record, 70, which is on Sundance Music, his own label, and all the children's records and a whole bunch more. Tom Chapin, it's been absolutely charming and lovely to have you in the neighborhood. Best of luck in your music and your career and your life.
Likewise. Thanks so much, Saul.
Shalom to you.
Shalom.